Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's green thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
Julie, has the end of the world occurred yet? The apocalypse, the twilight of the gods,
Let me get my calendar
second
out.
Coming, the rapture.
Hold on. Okay, there's my Mayan calendar, and it says that it will actually occur on December 21st, 2012.
Okay, so we have a little more time to freak out about it and for people to publish books about it and hey, do podcasts about it, right?
Exactly.
All right, so here's the thing. People have always been doing this. As we've discussed, we did a whole episode on why we're in love with the idea of the end of the world and how we just can't get enough of it.
We love an apocalypse.
Right, so... so for ages, we've had quacks stepping out and saying, I looked at a text, or I stared at the sun, or I ate some sort of plant I shouldn't have, and now I have inside information on what is going to happen to our planet in the next year, and would you consider buying this pamphlet?
Right, exactly. Or in the case that we have coming up with the Mayan calendar running out, do you want to book a package to say Belize for the end of the world? I'm not kidding. There are end of the world packages in Central America.
I bet there are.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. This is nothing new. It's been going on for ages, and it was definitely going on during the lifetime of one Sir Isaac Newton, the father of modern science, the Englishman who lived from 1643 to 1727, whose tomb actually makes a statement in Latin, of course, about how he was basically the best man that ever lived.
Yeah, please read that statement because I love it.
Yeah. Here's the write-up translated. Mortals rejoice that there has existed such and so great an ornament of the human race. Which you got to admit, even for someone like Sir Isaac Newton, who is pretty big medicine when it comes to science, that's kind of absurd. Who is deserving of that? Maybe Sir Isaac Newton. That's the thing.
Because
it's easy to dismiss him as the gravity and apples guy. But when you really start looking at his life, he accomplished so much. And he was so focused and a little crazy Well, more than a little crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the mind of this guy is pretty amazing. And so, so he's living, you know, he's doing his thing. He's just throwing his considerable intellect at various problems that come along.
As well as the end of the world, right?
Right, right. Yeah. Because he's going out in the street and this is a dude that is, you know, he's laying out the laws of motion. He's figuring out universal gravity. Mm-hmm. He's laying down some of the physical laws in our understanding of these physical laws that will allow us to go to the moon.
Right.
I mean, he spoke of standing on the shoulders of giants, but he's one of the giants that modern scientists stand upon.
Right.
And so he hears these louts talking about the end of the world, and they're talking about how they read it in the Bible, and he's like, whoa, hold on a second. I know a thing or two about theology.
Mm-hmm.
I've read the Bible. I've looked through and glimpsed the hidden truths in it.
Mm-hmm.
Let me take a look at this, and I'll get back to you. So he goes home. He analyzes the book of Daniel.
Mm-hmm.
Daniel, the Old Testament, had these visions of four beasts and all, and it's great, you know, apocalyptic gravy, for people who are into that sort of thing.
Apocalyptic gravy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, so he looks at it and he's like, all right, I looked at it. I looked at the data. I sort of weaved around in the Bible codes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you don't have anything to worry about. The end of the world is not happening till at least 2060. Maybe after 2060, but not until 2060. So everyone shut up. That was
right,
his thing.
Right. Just keep walking. Nothing to see here. And that is what we thought so amazing about this guy is not just the common things that we know about him that he has, contributed to society and to mathematics and physics and so on and so forth, but, that this guy was obsessive on all points and he could sort of bend the time space continuum seemingly to his will, you know, whether or not mm-hmm. he was, you know, meditating on gravity or perhaps even creating cat flap doors.
Yeah. That one's, we're not sure on that one, but there is the theory that he invented the cat flap because
yes.
he didn't want his cats constantly asking to be let into, cause you know how it is. You're in your lab, figuring out how the universe works and the cat wants in, scratching on the door. You let the cat in and you're like, all right. Yeah. And you're like, all right, you're in. Let me get back to work. Then the cat wants out.
So this is important when you're thinking about gravity, right? You cannot
right.
be interrupted. And so, yeah, he's working on that and he is, making the public feel safer and reforecasting the, apocalypse for 2060.
Right.
So, yeah, here we have the Chuck Norris of science.
Yeah. It's like the Chuck Norris thing. Cause it's like when I was reading about it and I was researching it for work, you know, his various accomplishments, mm-hmm. I kept finding these amazing things. Cause I mean, my understanding of Newton was a little deeper than the gravity and apples guy.
Right.
But I didn't know about some of these details of the man's life or I didn't have a good grasp for how his brain worked. But when you really look at what he did, he does come off like this Chuck Norris character, you know, and you're reminded of these lists, the internet lists of the things Chuck Norris has done, like the idea that Chuck Norris has counted to infinity twice.
Right.
Or that Chuck Norris's tears cure cancer, but since he's never cried, we're not able to cure cancer, that kind of thing.
Right.
And you look at Newton's life and some of this stuff is that outlandish.
It is. In fact, before we get to some of the other, maybe not as widely known information and more Chuck Norris information, let's talk really quickly about what we think of, when we think of Newton.
Okay. Well, for starters, there is the law of universal gravitation.
Mm-hmm.
This like basically strikes at the heart of how gravity works and how the universe is held together by gravity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one thing we often don't remember is that one of the ways that Newton expressed this, in his writings was to create a thought, experiment
mm-hmm.
in which you had a mountain that, was higher than the clouds, higher than the atmosphere,
mm-hmm.
and had a giant cannon on top of it, an orbital cannon,
mm-hmm.
that could fire a cannonball at just the right velocity that it would go into orbit around the planet.
Right.
Like, that's the way the man thought.
That's what he was daydreaming about.
Right, right. Most famously, he laid down the three laws of motion, and these were, this was 1687, and these will sound familiar to everybody. An object will remain at rest or moving in a straight line unless acted upon by an external force.
Mm-hmm.
When force is applied to an object, it will accelerate. So we get force equals mass times acceleration. And here's a big one. For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. And,
which seems all very obvious now, but obviously back in the day, this was...
Yeah, scholars used to wrestle with this.
Yeah.
For instance, Greek philosopher Aristotle thought that smoke moved upwards because the smoke was mostly air and therefore was consciously deciding to go into the sky to hang out with the rest of its air buddies.
which I kind of love.
Yeah. And then you had other people, Rene Descartes, who still identified God as the prime mover behind everything. Mm-hmm. Newton came down and, you know, he laid down the laws. And these are the fundamental laws that we base our modern understanding on. In addition to that, he looked at rainbows and figured mm-hmm. out how rainbows worked, that the prism or the raindrop mm-hmm. was not changing or coloring. It wasn't coloring the light.
Right. At the time, they thought that it was mm-hmm. like the sun's rays were dyeing the light, right?
Right. And from there, actually, it leads to his development of the reflecting telescope. Before that, everyone used the refracting telescope, mm-hmm. which wasn't as powerful. It could add various tints of color that weren't disruptive to what mm-hmm. you're trying to look at. And they were larger. So he comes along, he invents the reflecting telescope that mm-hmm. uses mirrors, and this becomes the standard.
Yeah, this is really cool. This was in your article. Your article's name again?
Top 10 Isaac Newton inventions.
Yep. A large mirror would capture the image, then a smaller mirror would bounce it into the viewer's eyes.
Right.
Which I think is really cool. Not only does this method produce a clearer image, it also allows for a much smaller telescope. So I just think it's cool that he had that perspective back then to say, how can I improve upon this? You know, let's not refract, let's reflect. And he actually grinded the mirrors himself and assembled a prototype and then presented it to the Royal Society in 1670. So let's talk about some of the other stuff that is just so amazing that this guy is sitting around and accomplishing so much in such a small amount of time, really.
All right. Well, here's one. All right. So, and again, you got to think about Newton's mind. Is it just this obsessive thing, this engine that any kind of data comes its way and he has to solve it. He's going to figure it out.
And he's a bit of a madman, too. We'll talk a little bit about this and how it might have affected his perspective.
Yeah, he never married. He didn't have much in the way of friends. Like, this was a man who would latch himself onto a riddle or a puzzle. Mm-hmm. I keep coming back to, I've mentioned this before, the old idea that a vampire, you leave a knot out for it, a really complex knot, mm-hmm. and it would sit there trying to untie it until the sun came up. Like, that's Newton's brain. And so, like, for instance, 1665, plague has hit, bubonic plague has hit England. Mm-hmm. And it's a huge problem. And so Newton, sees it. He's over at Cambridge and he decides to figure this out because it's actually shut down the university.
Right.
And that's where he needs to be to think. So
it's shut down the university for 18 months.
Yeah.
So he's got some time on his hands, right?
Right. So he's like, all right, I'm going to fix this. Here's the thing. Math wasn't sufficient at that time for him to study this. Mm-hmm. He needed a school of mathematics that would allow him to calculate problems that involve changing variables. Mm-hmm. So he invented one. He invented calculus.
Like, right.
He needed calculus. It didn't exist. He made it. Math was insufficient for his needs, so he just created his own, his new school of it.
That is so Norris, right? Again, we're talking about calculations concerning the angle of cannonballs and a ship's rate of acceleration. And that's just so that it could fuel his daydreaming, right?
Right. Yeah, and allow him to understand what was happening in the world. Mm-hmm. He was like, I'm having trouble understanding how this is spreading, how this is working. Math, you're not helping me. I'm going to have to do all the work for you. And mm-hmm. so he created calculus. He's the father of calculus. It should also be noted that German mathematician Gottfried Leibniz independently developed calculus around the same time.
Yeah, actually, sort of what has compounded this question mark about who created calculus is the fact that Newton was really private, and some would even say secret, and he didn't publish a lot. He might have written down quite a few things and presented them in various academic institutions, but he wasn't someone who was sort of, you know, gunning to get published and get and become known for something.
And in fact, some of the things that he obsessed about and wrote about certainly didn't really enter the public eye till quite a while later and mm-hmm. were kind of a dirty secret for a bit.
Are you talking about alchemy?
I am talking about alchemy, mm-hmm. yes. Yes, alchemy, as we've discussed, I think we discussed this in the Frankenstein podcast a bit. This is, of course, the old, typically thought of as medieval bastardization of chemistry mm-hmm. and occultism and philosophy and trickery and just, you know, there's chemistry bound up in it, but there's just a lot of mess.
I mean, kind of like just to be, not very kind about it. It's basically taking a pile of dog crap and spinning it into gold, right?
Or turning one's urine into gold and accidentally discovering phosphorus, that kind of thing.
Right.
The thing is, though, there was a lot of real chemistry there. There was some real science going on in the world of alchemy. Mm-hmm. And if you were interested in the chemistry of the world, this was, for the most part, the only game in town in as far as the West goes. So of course he studied it. And the thing is that alchemy only became this sort of dirty word later in his life and after his death.
Right.
And also he was not afraid of looking into something that was kind of crazy. And he really believed that there was hidden truth to be found in alchemy.
Well, and during his time too, wasn't alchemy punishable by law?
It became so.
Right. So it's something that he kind of squirreled away because obviously he didn't want to have any sort of negative repercussions from it. But it wasn't until the 1930s when I believe that it was at an auction house that someone found a huge volume of his writings. Mm-hmm. And it was discovered to the extent to which he had dedicated really his life to alchemy.
Yeah, and that he was serious. Like, it wasn't just this is all nonsense, but I'm kind of interested in the chemistry. No, he was trying to create the Philosopher's Stone.
Yeah, tell us about that.
The Philosopher's Stone, its exact description varies from text to text, but it's clearly like a man-made stone or a man-made elixir, and it has this power of universal transmutation. So it can turn lead into stone. It can cure illnesses. It can transform a headless cow into a swarm of bees or allow mm-hmm. you to throw some wizard semen, in a jar and add a few other ingredients and make a homunculus.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like the ultimate power. And that's why he was interested in it, because ideally this would give him power over life and death.
Well, and, it turns out he is really interested in this mystical realm.
Yeah.
And so the idea, some people have said, some historians have looked back at the way his mind works and said, he may not have been able to discuss the laws of motion or discover them, name them, if he didn't have this particular mystical bent, because he's thinking about the forces of the universe, right?
Right.
And trying to harness them. So I think that's really interesting in thinking about that when you think about Newton. He wrote more than 1 million words on the subject of alchemy, which is amazing. Much more than he ever dedicated to, his stalwart science.
Of course, you could look at it in this sense, that science for Newton was a problem that was a knot that he was eventually able to untie in many cases. Alchemy ultimately proves that knot that never completely untied for him. So
right.
It was probably the kind of thing where you just keep writing and writing about it because you're never going to reach that point with alchemy that you're like, all right, Philosopher's Stone, case closed. Now let me move on to something else, right?
Right. Yeah.
And the same thing as we discussed in this doomsday stuff. He was interested in theology. He was interested in discovering the coded secrets of the Bible, the wisdom of the ancients.
Mm-hmm.
And you can sit there all day looking for these secret codes, and you're just going to end up writing more and more words about it because you're not going to uncover this hidden equation in biblical text, and you're not going to find it in alchemy either. But
don't tell that to Dan Brown.
Well, no, he did find the hidden equation.
Oh, sure, he did.
But
that's right.
It had to do with publishing dollars. So.
Yeah, that's his own kind of alchemy. But, we will talk a bit more about his sort of obsessive quest for religion, thinking about religion and the Bible. But before we do that, I really want to talk about how he was fighting crime and melting money.
All right. Sir Isaac Newton, crime fighter. And this was an area that before I was researching this for work, I really didn't know anything about this corner of his life.
Mm-hmm. Well, he was a bit of a politician, although kind of a backseat politician, mm-hmm. I guess you could say.
Yeah. So you have to go back to 1600s. England's financial system is in full-blown crisis mm-hmm. mode, okay? The currency consisted entirely of silver coins, and the silver was often worth more than the value stamped on it due to the economic situation.
Okay.
So people were often melting the coins down or chipping the silver from the edges and selling them to France. So pretty soon, the coinage just looks like crap.
It's completely mangled.
It's just mangled. People have been melting the stuff down. They've been chipping off the corners. So you can imagine at the counter, someone goes into a store to buy something around this time, and they're just dumping just a handful of mangled bits of silver and counterfeit mangled bits of silver. Because how difficult is it to counterfeit a mangled lump of shiny metal?
Right. But I was just thinking, think of the U.S. dollar. And just mm-hmm. maybe the only thing that's left is the eye in the pyramid.
Right.
And presenting that. I mean, obviously it's going to be a lot easier to say, to sort of put together something that looks like money.
Right. So the powers that be, they know Newton is a smart cookie.
Mm-hmm.
They have an idea that he's the kind of guy that likes to throw himself at a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Probably looks good to throw Newton at a problem.
I like to think of them all sitting around a table.
Yeah.
All wearing black and saying, we need to bring Newton in.
Yeah. Or they have the Newton signal on the roof.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's also worth noting that, you know, we're talking about counterfeiting a little here, and alchemy has in many places, been tied to counterfeiting,
mm-hmm.
because alchemy often involved the creation of dyes. And since it couldn't actually change something, one metal into another, it did involve sometimes the technique of creating like fool's gold,
mm-hmm.
or disguising one metal as another. But that's kind of incidental. So they bring Newton in. And it's largely ceremonial. Nobody really expects Newton to solve the problems. And
yeah, they give him a real title, right? Like
right.
Warden of the Royal Mint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, what does Newton do?
What does our man do? He dons a cape.
He throws on a disguise. Yeah. Heads out into the mean streets of London, like down into like just the poverty and crime ridden alleys. And he starts hanging out with the counterfeiters.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, he has them arrested and subsequently executed. Because it was a major offense in those days to counterfeit currency.
Yeah.
But yeah, like how amazing is that? I mean, he's essentially the Batman of the 1700s, right? In the 1700s. He's wearing a disguise, going out there, fighting crime,
mm-hmm.
then coming back to his scientific lair and developing, milled edges for coins. And these are, if you get a quarter out,
mm-hmm.
you find, or any coin where you, you look at the edges and if you see little lines, those are milled edges. And the idea here is if you're gonna clip the coin and try mm-hmm. and sell the silver to France, it's gonna be very noticeable and then you'll be arrested and possibly executed.
Of course, the other part of that is that it took him a year to create that particular currency, right?
And, oh, yes.
I mean, the cojones on this guy, he gathered up, well, not just he, but, you know, I'm sure he advocated this and they adopted it, but they gathered up all of the currency and melted it down so
yeah.
then he could then spend like 18 hours a day, you know, working on this problem and creating a new currency.
Yeah, he was like, money is canceled for the next year or so. And then
yeah.
we're going to have new money. I hope everybody's cool with that.
Which sounds like it probably wasn't as big of a problem as it would seem like today because, you know, it was the economy was a mess anyway and there was a lot of rioting before this even happened. So, I mean, wow.
Yeah, he reorganized the mint, their system of creating the coins. Like he went in there and he just kicked butt in the factories.
Mm-hmm.
And the next thing you know, you have this new modern standard of what a coin is.
Yeah.
So,
you know, all in a day's work, right?
Yeah. And I just made this part up, but I like to joke too that he put his own scowling face on each coin to convince people, that counterfeiting was a bad idea.
He yeah. probably did put some sort of code in there.
Yeah.
For sure. And let's talk about that. And specifically, let's talk about whether or not he may have been suffering from mercury poisoning.
Yeah. So how would he have been poisoned by mercury? Are we suspecting that someone poisoned him?
No, actually, because he was using mercury quite a bit. And we know that he had a couple of very serious mental breakdowns in the 1690s.
Okay.
You know, sort of had fevered writings from him, would send letters to his friends, didn't make any sense. We already know that he was an obsessive guy,
mm-hmm.
And that he was trying to find hidden meaning in the Bible. He learned Hebrew, spent half of his life really devoting himself to trying to figure this out. So there's this idea that his sleeplessness, his digestive upset, his loss of memory, his paranoid delusions could have been mercury poisoning because we know, and this is from the Chemistry Chronicles, Newton's Hair by Mark S. Lesney, they know that that from a hair sample that he had a high amount of mercury in his system and that he attempted to extract the mercury from various metals during his alchemy. And again, we know that he spent a good deal of time trying to work his magic on this and dealing with mercury. So it's very possible that at least some of his obsessive nature, well, not so much his obsessive nature, but some of him sort of going off kilter could have been delusions that were inspired by mercury poisoning.
Now, here's another possibility. He actually succeeded in creating the Philosopher's Stone,
mm-hmm.
Became immortal, used homunculus technology to clone himself, which involved mercury, and that is what is actually buried at Westminster And that is what they got the hair sample for. And he's been locked up in his lab ever since, his secret lab, of course, working on how to prevent the 2060 apocalypse.
Okay, so if he's a homunculus now.
No. He created the homunculus, and that's what was buried.
Oh, right. Okay.
I mean, so undoubtedly, he would have homunculi working for him now as his agents.
An army of homunculi, of course.
Yeah.
This sounds like a pretty pat answer to the mysteries of Newton.
Yes, I'm going to have to see if they'll let me add that page to the article.
I bet they will.
They probably will.
Yeah.
I think I make a pretty strong case.
You know, it turns out, though, again, his devotion to religion and the Bible could have had something to do with his own personal biography in which he viewed himself. Again, this is from that paper, Chemistry Chronicles. Quote, a Christian apostate and adherer to the then prescribed Arian heresy that Christ was not divine, Newton still took very seriously his own birth on Christmas Day. He felt that it gave him a level of prophetic responsibility that, if not equal to Christ, was certainly cut from the same cloth, and that it was his own particular role from the start to reveal God's universal laws to all humankind.
Or to justify God's ways to man, right?
Yeah. There you go.
Wow. So, and you know, actually, that's interesting. Like, maybe we should be more into the idea of celebrating Sir Isaac Newton at Christmas. Like, you just completely, like, retool the holiday.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where the tree is all Newton-based instead of, like, a manger scene.
We've talked about this poo-poo platter of religions before in which I think we were going to call it Saganism after Carl Sagan, right?
Uh-huh.
And everybody wears turtlenecks.
Right.
Why not? Yeah. Why not celebrate Sir Isaac Newton on Christmas Day?
Yeah, just a celebration of physics, alchemy, crime fighting, and possibly cat doors, depending on where you fall in that particular controversy.
Right, I can see it now. Like the rainbow is a sort of logo for this holiday.
Yeah.
Everybody constructs these sort of paper mache rainbows in their houses instead of Christmas trees.
Yeah,
I'm up for it.
Yeah. Well, hey, if you want to know more about Sir Isaac Newton and his life, you can check out that article that I wrote on the 10 inventions of Sir Isaac Newton. Just search for that on the How Stuff Works homepage. Also, How Isaac Newton Worked. We have a great article about that. And if you really want to know more about the alchemy, too, do a quick search for Newton, Alchemy, and Nova, because PBS's Nova has a rich website with a lot of resources about what we know about his alchemical side.
Indeed. Does that mean that we should roll out the robot, get some mail?
Yeah, let's get the robot out here, share some mail with us. All right, here's one from Crystal. Crystal writes in. Crystal actually wrote in with a number of thoughts on some past episodes. I'm going to read what she said about our episode that we did about a world without men, about men going extinct.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, for the past 6 years, I've been self-employed in such ways that I work intimately with families. I've seen many different kinds of families and lifestyles, and I have come to the following conclusion about men and women. Okay?
All right.
She says, and this is her opinion, without women, men are somehow not quite fully developed adults, although they are perfectly happy in their lives at that point. Men need women to take that last step into adulthood. And then she says, without men, women are fully functional adults, but don't pursue happiness, letting responsibilities overshadow it. Women need men to be reminded to value happiness for its own sake and hence be happy. Obviously, this only applies to heterosexual relationships. I haven't had a large enough sample size of homosexual marriages to make any hypothesis yet. I think even if humans somehow evolved past men, women would keep them around to remind us happiness should be sought after. Love the podcast. Thanks, Robert, Julie, and everyone else who makes it happen.
Huh. I think that's interesting. In the podcast, we talked about whether or not men might go extinct.
And whether the world would be better.
For a particular reason. Not just us making that up. But
Whether whether it would be a less violent world, a more polite world, a prettier world.
Huh. Well, and you know how I feel about it. Like, I think that's interesting. I think that she talked about it being a cultural norm. So for me, when we talk about women and we talk about them being the better angels of our nature, I always feel like that sort of makes women even more one-dimensional.
Yeah.
I gotta say, I'm not saying that we're not great. I'm just saying that, you know, taking that other side of it is not giving, you know, full complexity to women out there.
I think that's fair.
All right.
Though, again, it should be noted, Newton didn't have any time for him. Yeah.
He had time for cats, though.
Yeah.
And cat flaps.
Yeah, possibly. Possibly cats and dogs. Though it is weird because there people are divided on the whole pet issue. There are some people who say, yeah, he definitely kept a cat. He kept a dog. There are some stories that say that he had a dog named Diamond, and there were all sorts of wacky adventures. And then other people were like, Newton had no dogs or cats. So, I don't know. You know, we just don't know for sure.
Well, also, pet ownership was a very different thing back in that day, right? So,
yeah.
I can't imagine that he was going to Target and probably getting them cute little Halloween outfits.
Yeah, Diamond wasn't sitting in his lap wearing a little sweater and
no.
everything. So.
No.
All right. So, hey, if you have anything you would like to share about Sir Isaac Newton, about alchemy, about the idea that he's still out there in his lair and homunculi perform his every bidding as he tries to prevent the end of the world in 2060, let us know. We'd love to hear from you. You can always find us on the social media platforms. We are on Facebook as Stuff to Blow Your Mind, and we are on Twitter as Blow the Mind.
And you can always drop us a line at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join HowStuffWorks staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air, and we are underway. The Great American Race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing. Live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes. Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR, the Motor Racing Network. Work.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.